Hello, friends. This is Brent from Burgundy Blog. You can find me on Twitter at Burgundy Blog, and this is a new installment of the Burgundy Blogcast podcast. Today is Sunday, December 3rd, 2023, 9 p.m. hour. It's week 13 of the NFL season, and earlier today, the Washington Commanders suffered their third straight completely ridiculous defeat at a foggy, soggy FedEx Field at the hands of the Miami Dolphins by a score of 45-15. The record drops to a hideous 4-9. The completely uncompetitive 30-point defeat served to solidify, in my mind at least, the necessity of every individual currently having any authority or responsibility with this team in an employed capacity being loaded into a rocket and fired directly at the sun. It's obviously pointless to do a detailed game recap. This game felt like pro versus amateur from the opening kickoff. Tua and Tyreek and company were doing anything they wanted the entire day. Ultimately, I guess Tyreek only had the 150-something and two touchdowns, but I'm sure if he and Mike McDaniel had set out to shatter the single-game record for receiving yardage, they could have accomplished it in three quarters. On the flip side, the Commanders' offense got almost nothing going except for Howell's two touchdown scampers. Well, I guess one was more of a scrum than a scamper, but if you insist that I comment on some specific individual performances, I'll give you these. Howell, of course, was not good. Well under 200 yards passing and a pick six for the third straight game. Also, three more sacks to keep him on pace for breaking the single season record. Corner Benjamin St. Juice has either completely lost his confidence or been exposed as a backup, masquerading as a starter. His season continues to be extremely forgettable, and that could be a pretty big hit to go from a young, up-and-coming, potentially high-ceiling corner to maybe the discard pile, pending evaluation by the new GM. Right tackle Andrew Wiley gave up several more combined sacks and tackles for losses. He has proven to be a disastrous offseason addition. Terry McLaurin, three targets on the day, no catches, no yards, no touchdowns. That kind of stat line for a starting receiver in a game that you lost by 30 points is absolutely an indictment of not only the player, but also the quarterback and the offensive coordinator. I did think running back Chris Rodriguez looked pretty good in limited duty, and he still seems to me like somebody who could be a starter someday. Going back to defense, Jamin Davis made a few splash plays, credit to him. In particular, his PBU, when he was matched up one-on-one against Waddle, was pretty impressive. And lastly, unfortunately, I think it must be noted that the presences of Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne were, again, barely noticed. And I did want to drill down specifically on Payne just for a second. After a pretty hot start for a game or two, he's had a super quiet, underwhelming season. And I was a little afraid of this, and I think there was reason to, if not anticipate, then at least be concerned about this. And that, of course, is that Payne was, to some degree, a contract year wonder. Now, he and Allen are both getting paid a boatload. As much as I like Allen, who has been a very consistent player over his career, I'm forced to concede that neither one has played up to the contract so far in 2023. However, for John Allen, this is a little bit of an outlier. For Payne, I'm afraid, this relatively low-impact year actually resembles his first 3 years more closely than his most recent previous one. In other words, as most of you will recall, Daron Payne, though unquestionably and freakishly physically talented, was hardly a star until last year when his immediate financial future first came into question. In the final year of his rookie deal, he completely went off, looked like he was blossoming into a longtime force, and secured the bag. But unlike a super consistent performer like a Terry McLaurin or a John Allen, that kind of player I think you have to view as a bit of a risk come contract time. And so far this year, I'd say it's pretty hard to be confident that that risk is going to pay off. One game detail I did find interesting, Mike McDaniel and the Dolphins, in the fourth quarter, having already put the game well out of reach, decided to go for it on a fourth and goal, and of course, converted fairly easily. And I was thinking about whether that's sort of an FU or a run up the score kind of decision, or what exactly the etiquette would be there. And I think I'm going to push back on any sense that that might be unsportsmanlike. I actually think if a game is out of hand and it's starting to turn into a pride or shame issue, there's a good argument to be made that even though it's a more conservative play, kicking a field goal there might be more representative of accumulating meaningless points. I kind of think if you're dominating a team, it's actually somewhat respectful to run another play from scrimmage, give them an opportunity to man up and stop you, give them an opportunity to prevent you from adding to the margin. I think if you're up by a lot at the end, you should probably be going for it instead of attempting a field goal on all the fourth and shorts, because three doesn't really help anyone at that point. So just run a play. Some of you might tune out on this or not care about it, and maybe it'll strike you as reaching or piling on, but this really got stuck in my craw. A few hours before the game, Schefter put out a tweet about the Commanders. A Sunday morning game day Schefter tweet is a fairly high-profile thing. If he tweets a newsy item about a player or a team while you're preparing your tailgate or driving home from church, he's generally doing it because he got it from a good source and he thinks it's interesting. And this morning he tweeted that today Ron Rivera intended to give some extra responsibility and opportunity to a little-known 29-year-old low-level assistant coach named Christian Garcia. Now, it's not like I've never, and none of you have ever heard of Christian Garcia. Many of you know of him, and you may have heard, like me, specifically from John Keim a couple of times over the course of the last year, that the staff has been fairly high on Garcia as a possible future impact coach. But as recently as 2 years ago, Christian Garcia was like an intern or a quality control assistant. He entered this year as the assistant defensive backs coach to Brent Wieselmeyer, who of course was fired last week, and was himself quite inexperienced and bad. So today, somebody within the Commanders organization with some credibility fed to Adam Schefter with sufficient emphasis and enthusiasm to trigger dissemination that Ron Rivera entered the week and this game with an intention to showcase Christian Garcia. This is a flatly ridiculous narrative. First of all, they were about to face the most high-octane passing offense in the league, a team that is breaking records for efficiency and which scored 70 points in a game against the Broncos a couple months ago. Secondly, the recent deputy or backup coach to a senior defensive backs coach who oversaw the league's worst unit and got fired a week ago is probably not going to be your secret weapon against Tyreek Hill. This was just simply a ridiculous, silly, absurd topic to be boosting on a game day. I guess some are trying to give Rivera the benefit of the doubt for being generally known as a nice guy and benevolent and maybe just trying to get some exposure for a bright young coach. So if they were to go on today and shock the world and stifle the Dolphins offense, then maybe this Christian Garcia could thereby build his resume a little. But call me cynical. I just see it as Ron trying embarrassingly to continue to save face by attaching his name to whichever individual within arm's length at the moment might be ready to in some way demonstrate learning or growth or development so that his legacy in retirement can be more for that than for his team's extremely disappointing performance. Either that or an anticipatory partial blame shift, which is even sadder. So I'm sorry, but that whole thing was idiotic. I'm just going to throw this out there. You might want to call me Captain Obvious. But for all the discussion of Rivera steadying the ship and at least leaving the organization in better shape than he found it, I mean, from a culture standpoint, okay, sure, I'll probably give you that. Although the change in ownership on its own will be obviously exponentially more impactful in that particular way. But in the sense of the caliber of the team itself, and specifically its roster and players, this team is not good. I do not think it's clearly better than the one Rivera took over from Jay Gruden. I mean, maybe, but Rivera oversaw up front the departure of, you know, some decent talent, especially along the offensive line, with Trent Williams and Brandon Sheriff. And this roster that he'll be turning over to Mystery's successor is not good, and it is just not nearly as good as most fans believed entering the year. I'm not sure you've got a plus starter at any spot along the offensive line. I'll give you that you do have some talent at receiver and at running back. The skill positions are okay, although tight end is basically a wasteland. That seems strange, actually, given how high we were on the young prospects coming into the year. But Logan Thomas, obviously near the end of the line. John Bates can block, but that's about it. Cole Turner disappeared. Curtis Hodges can't get on the field. Amari Rodgers, who knows what he'll be after his return from injury. Quarterback could be a plus, and I'm going to come back to this in a minute, but sure, the team is better at quarterback than they were when he came in, having Haskins in that role. But I think even staunch Howell supporters are going to be stopping short at this point of declaring that Rivera has located and groomed and will be handing over a surefire long-term starter. And on defense, I mean, good grief. You've got two extremely expensive defensive tackles that at the moment are not making much of a difference. You have nothing at defensive end. You have almost nothing at linebacker. You have Curl at safety, who's seeming more like an excellent part, but not exactly a centerpiece. And it's possible that you're handing over almost nothing else in the secondary. On specials, you have Tress Way, who's excellent, but getting up there. And then I think both your long snapper and your kicker are probably gone next year. So this roster needs a lot more than a refresh or a kickstart. I got a feeling that Josh Harris is going to give full authority to the new GM and in fact encourage him to throw a grenade at this. And I definitely think there's a chance this could get worse before it gets better. I'm going to slide in here another thought I've been having for a few days. Obviously, as this season continues to flounder, and Sam Howell, partly because of his own limitations, and perhaps even more profoundly because he's in a totally unwinnable situation, continues to look, you know, at least at times, fairly pedestrian and throw pick sixes. And as long as concurrently the Commanders' draft position climbs to, I think right now, number 4 and potentially as high as number 3, there's obviously going to be a lot of discussion about the quarterback position in the coming months. And so there will be plenty of time and more pods to cover that in the future. But there is a little wrinkle in this, a little factor that I think is not really being discussed much on Twitter yet, but will certainly have to play a role eventually in the new regime's decision calculus. And that is the question of what the Commanders could possibly get for Sam Howell in a trade. See, the idea of drafting a quarterback, a new one of their own, a new fresh shiny toy for the new coach and GM in the top 5, whether it's Caleb Williams or Drake May, or the Daniels kid from LSU, or Michael Penix or Bo Nix, or whoever becomes sexy by April. If they pull the trigger on somebody like that, I kind of doubt they're keeping Sam Howell as a backup. They're going to be going all in on that next dude. And so lately, I think, you know, the discussion has started to evolve into, do you want Sam Howell or do you want Bo Nix? But, you know, depending on how his last few games go, I think we should expect that the conversation is going to morph a little into, do you want Sam Howell or do you want Bo Nix and a second? Or if some other GM out there really likes what he's seen so far this year, do you want Sam Howell or Bo Nix and a late first? Or can you maybe even package number 3 or number 4 and one or more of the other multiple top 100 picks that you've already accumulated and maybe the top 40 pick that you've recouped for trading Howell and magically flip all that into a Caleb Williams? Okay, that's going to be part of the conversation. So I think whether Sam Howell ends up being the guy here for the duration or not, I think it's in our interest for him to look good in December either way, because he might be able to bring you something. I don't know why anyone at this point would be just dead set on Eric Bieniemy returning, even as offensive coordinator, if he were to somehow be foisted onto a new head coach. And even less so on the idea of promoting him to be the next head coach. Listen, I'm not here to kill him. He's not been horrible. He hasn't embarrassed himself. He hasn't embarrassed Sam Howell or the team. There have been obviously stretches this year during which the team was far more effective on offense than they ever were under Scott Turner. Although I'm not even sure why I'm saying that, because it's such a low bar as to be almost irrelevant. I think he's done some good things. In one sense, I like that he's obviously willing to do his own thing. Critics be damned. He obviously does not care if you don't like him throwing it 70 times a game or lining up in shotgun on every third or fourth and one, and I respect to a degree that he doesn't care. But I don't really love that he does all that stuff. I think it's extremely questionable whether he is balanced enough or willing to become balanced enough. I know he's a rookie full-time play caller, but you have every right to doubt or be skeptical of his feel for play calling at this point, at least with personnel that does not include Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. We are not seeing a lot of brilliantly called plays that seem just perfect against the defensive alignment. We are not seeing a ton of wide open receivers. We are not seeing a lot of big plays and big gains on schedule or as drawn up. If you're like me, you've noticed in recent weeks this feeling that almost a majority of the Commanders' big plays on offense this year have come off of howl scrambles or broken plays or unscripted things. And I'm not sure what it is that Bieniemy has to hang his hat on and stake his claim, not only for continuing in his role, but potentially expanding his role, becoming the top dog. I mean, if the new GM wants to interview him and has a hunch about him, I guess so be it. Again, he's not disqualified himself, but the luster has worn off for me for sure. And at this point, I would say it's far, far more likely that he gets let go with everyone else. Last thing here, on this subject of tanking. Many people say it's imaginary, like Bigfoot or unicorns. Others cling to belief that it not only happens, but helps. And I'm in that category, you already knew that. But of course, if you use your head, you know that tanking is not players throwing games, losing one-on-ones, blowing plays on purpose, intentionally fumbling, or faking injuries. Yes, of course, that's ridiculous. Every NFL player is his own business and is highly motivated in a week-to-week basis to perform, to increase his own stock and worth. And so, no, players do not tank. Most coaches also, for the sake of their own reputations, do not tank. I think unless maybe you have a brand new coach who's feeling super duper confident and secure in his next few years of employment, I think he might at least consider it. But that certainly does not apply to Ron Rivera, who is so desperately right now trying to salvage his coaching reputation and legacy. But yes, of course, ownership regimes can and will tank. Josh Harris definitely wants high picks for his incoming GM. He did not trade away his two best defenders because he was looking to please the home crowd in week 13. Most of this is intuitive, but let me address the idea of tanking from a fan perspective, because by now I'm hardly alone. In fact, almost every Commanders fan is rooting for the team to lose these meaningless games in the final month. And so my anti-victory attitude is understood. But allow me to explain a likely difference between me and you in our respective fan attitudes and rooting strategies. Whereas most fans start rooting for losses towards the end of the season when it has declared itself as obviously hopeless, I start rooting for the losses the moment that I personally start expecting that the season will eventually become hopeless. And so if I have conviction that you're looking at a 6 or 7 or 8 win team as the summer ends and week 1 approaches, it's right then, potentially immediately, that I start to dread a narrow, misleading week 1 win against the Cardinals and a narrow, misleading week 2 comeback win against the Broncos. See, you and I are not different at all in regretting wins like that right now in hindsight, but we are different in the sense that I have become conditioned to regret them in real time, having such certainty of eventual failure. And that is the sort of psychological battery that being a fan of and having a blog about the Washington Redskins / Washington football team / Washington Commanders in the 21st century has inflicted.